Yes, and welcome, welcome, welcome once again to another podcast episode and show of the TJ McAloon Show. As always, I am your host, TJ McAloon, back another week, back finally on the normal time slot of Tuesday, or Wednesday, or even Thursday, depending on when you are deciding to download this episode, but back on the normal schedule of releasing the new episode. I believe it's late Tuesday, early Wednesday, Forum Place to Be Nation. It's been a while since sending this over to the good guys over there who work on putting the show together and putting it up on Podbean and also their website. But schedule has been crazy. Now we're finally back to normal. If you haven't noticed, especially during the recording today, I'm a little congested thanks to being a new dad and figuring out that your children are little cesspools of disease, and they just love to carry stuff. And then once they carry it and get it out of their system in roughly 6 hours, then they pass it along to you, and then you in turn get sick. So for the last, been about a week now, I've been suffering from congestion, sinuses, and coughing, and just all sorts of things, all because of hanging out with my little six-month-old. She had a little sickness, lasted for about a half a day after she got a little flu shot and a little other vaccines, and then passed along to me. I, in turn, get a 102-degree temperature. That passes within 4 to 6 hours, and then since then, it's just been congestion all the time. It sucks, but it's what you do. Anyway, enough about me sounding like I'm 4 feet underwater. I guess this week, baseball is coming to an end. It's a sprint, the final 2 weeks. I recorded this episode with Zach Reimer probably last week, a couple days ago, actually last week. And regardless, so a lot of stuff not timely, but I was right on the heels of the Jung Ho Gong injury. So you get to hear our reaction to said injury and what it does to the Pirates. Me being a big Pirates homer and a beloved fan of the team, not just last few years, but a fan since the late 80s, early 90s, and suffered through the dredges of the 22-23-year absence of not only a postseason berth like, the Blue Jays, who will be making it back this year, but no winning seasons. So baseball was super boring and very terrible to watch, but now it's fun. The team's doing great, 30-some-odd games over 500 now. But regardless, so we talk a lot about that. We discuss in a good depth about what's going on over in the AL, if there's a contender for the Blue Jays, and what's going to take to knock that team off, whether it could be a Royals can find out their, regain their midseason form or early season form, see that they've slacked off over the last couple of weeks. Or a team out west, say the Astros, maybe the Rangers, the Rangers especially with their high-powered offense with Prince Fielder, Odor, Beltre, even Elvis Andrews, that team, or who knows if they can get someone new from like a Ryan Rua, or I'm not sure if Joey Gallo made the 40-man roster, but sure as hell, if he did, I would hope that he'd make a postseason roster for his bat to come off the bench and provide a spark if needed. So give a listen here with Zach. We go a little long, but he's an old friend of mine. We can talk about baseball to Star Wars to other cartoons to beer. So we kept it just solely on baseball with a little Star Wars at the end. I loved it. It's great to have a nice rapport with someone that you can just start with one topic and then you're off and running. You don't need to worry about grasping for straws or trying to make the interview sound very, very well. But Zach does a great job. Go follow him on Twitter as well, at Zach Reimer. He's always a good person that will tweet. That makes me think of tweeting. I completely forgot about the jinx and what he hears from his followers or readers or fans of teams that he texts or tweets out the hex of a jinx when someone has a perfect game or a no-hitter. Man, that does upset me that I did not ask him about the hashtag jinx from his Twitter account. But anyway, I guess something we can talk about with him next time, whenever the Pirates are on the World Series and they're playing the Royals or the Astros or maybe even the Blue Jays. That'd be great to see a Pirates-Blue Jays World Series just to see Russ Martin come back and face his old team. Anyway, I'm done here talking. I'll leave it up to Zach to carry the conversation from here. So after the break, I'll be back on. And here's Zach Reimer. On the show this week, baseball season is coming to an end by the time you're going to be able to listen to this. There's going to be about 2 weeks left in the season. I know we're recording this today on a Thursday, but through the magic of podcasting, you can listen to it whenever you get a chance to get around to it. So that being said, I made a call out to one of my old podcast guests, one of the first ever that I had on back when I did the TJ McLoone show on my own. Now we're over here with Place to Be Nation. He's still with Bleacher Report. I swear he's been there since 2008 when the company first started as this little clickbait organization out in San Francisco. But from the Bay Area, a man who loves Star Wars as much as he does the Oakland A's and baseball, Zach Reimer. Zach, I thank you for taking time out today to come on and talk on a sad day as the Pirates are currently losing 9-6 on top of the ninth with two runners on, and Jung Ho Kang might be done for the year.
Yeah, for you as a Pirates fan, not exactly a good couple of days, is it?
No, well, it is not.
They're finding out a lot of lore that this Cubs team is like, they're scared. Like, they've been good for a while now, and it's legit. So you've just run into a buzzsaw, my friend. I hate to say it.
Well, I mean, I say we as the annoying fan that aligns himself with the team. But they ran into a buzzsaw that was the New York Mets whenever they got Cespedes and they had Uribe, and they're starting to turn that corner to where they just distance themselves from the Nationals and they handled them well. You know, what's the difference between that Mets team who got hot and this Cubs team that is hot?
There's not much of a difference if you think about it, because that Mets team, they were all about great pitching, and then all of a sudden their offense came alive. The Cubs have kind of done the same thing, where all along, you know, even before Jake Arrieta turned into a right-handed Clayton Kershaw, they had really good pitching.
Right.
But now, like, ever since the second Schwarber call-up, you know, I don't really know about this theory that hitting is contagious, but it does seem like he had something to that line, and the glue has kind of put all the pieces together. The Mets and the Cubs are kind of like in the same boat, or peas in the pod, or whatever you want to call it, but they're very similar in how they've gone about it.
Is this National League one where any one of the six playoff teams, because I know there's still, as I said, 2 weeks left, or actually 2.5 weeks left, but the playoff picture is basically set in stone as it is now. Any one of these six teams ends up in the World Series, would it be surprising to you? Like, is there a team that, if they make it, that you'd be like, whoa, like the Royals last year. No one expected them to play in the World Series.
No, I think you're right. I can see a situation where any of the teams make it into the World Series, because as you look at them, it's like, right now, they're all at a point where they're all kind of like juggernaut teams.
Right.
Like the Mets, they have their awesome pitching, they have their awesome offense. The Cardinals have been all year. The Pirates, they're probably the most underrated team in any league this year. The Cubs, we know, we just talked about them. And the Dodgers now, I mean, they were kind of going through a slump for a while, but they kind of got their stuff together, especially offensively, where they went through a really long slump. Now they're kind of coming out of it, and they potentially have Howie Kendrick, Yasiel Puig, guys like that coming back. So it's not like in the American League, where you look at the American League and it's like, okay, the Toronto Blue Jays, you deserve to go, but everybody else in here, not as much. Because
right.
The Royals, I mean, they were good all year, but now it's like you look at them and it's like, wow, I mean, where did all this mediocrity come from?
Exactly.
What the hell, Royals? I mean, it's totally a different story in the AL, where it looks like the Blue Jays are bust. But yeah, National League is... I mean, the National League side of the playoffs are going to be really interesting this year. I'm looking forward to it.
I know the hot takes are redo the playoff structure, aside from the Cespedes MVP, and I won't waste your time discussing how much of an asinine hot take that is, making Cespedes the National League MVP, because I'm sure you find that very funny when people say that, correct?
Oh, that's adorable. That's all I'm going to say about that. It's like, seriously?
Yeah.
The MVP?
Right. Unless they rename it the knee-jerk MVP.
What was that?
Unless they rename it the knee-jerking MVP.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, what, has he played probably like 40 games in the National League? And
right.
You want to make him the MVP?
Right.
Okay.
But, I mean, I was going to go on some of the playoffs, but now I just sidetracked myself.
That MVP race, it's Bryce Harper, and it's not even close, right?
It's Bryce Harper, and it's not even close, like you said. I mean, people want to say, oh, the Nationals, they've kind of fallen out of the race, and Bryce Harper wasn't that good for a while there. It's like, no, stop. Like, you don't understand, like, how good he's been this season. I think, you know, you want to go by one measure. I think his OPS plus is over 200.
Oh, my God.
And the last guy to do that, I think, was Barry Bonds, like, 10 years ago.
Right.
And, you know, as far as age 22 season's going, he's up there with, like, Tate Lurley and, like, T41. What a number. I mean, he's hitting 330. He's leading baseball in average on-base percentage, slugging OPS, and he has 40 home runs. I don't care if his team is in last place, second place, first place. A guy like that is the most valuable player. So this is not a discussion as far as I'm concerned. And I'm not, I probably sound like I'm insulted that we're even talking about Cespedes for MVP, but it's just like, you know, stop
it's
trying
true.
To make drama where there is no drama. This is not Trout versus Cabrera back in 2012, which was solid arguments on both sides. There is no argument. It is Harper all the way.
So this kind of reminds me of, I forget what year was it that Dawson won the MVP with the Cubs as a last place team, right?
That was 1980-something. I wasn't there, so I don't remember, but I think that had something to do with the fact it was just kind of like a weak MVP crop, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was in 2003. A-Rod won the AL MVP for a last-place team, and that was because, like, nobody else in the American League really heard of it. So, yeah, it can happen. So, yeah, there's that.
But this year, there's no one that has separated themselves to challenge them. I mean, McCutchen started out so badly this year, I think hitting 148 after April before he became McCutchen. Greinke hasn't separated himself like Kershaw did last year to win the MVP. And there's no one on the Cardinals that has done well. And that's all I can. The Cubs, there's Rizzo is very great, but Arrieta just came on this last year. So this year's crop is pretty weak, correct?
Yeah, I think if you're going to make a case for somebody else, you know, the people with the best numbers are guys like Votto, who he's been really good, but it's been all offense, and his offense hasn't compared to Harper's. Goldschmidt is another guy. Goldschmidt is this ridiculous talent, and it's like, dude, if he played for the Yankees,
right,
the Red Sox, or the Dodgers, he would probably be one of, if not the most celebrated superstar in the game. He's that good, and he's having that good of a season. But he's not having Harper season. So it comes down to, like, you know, there are other guys deserve shout outs in the voting, but it's like,
right.
I mean, Harper all the way. I mean, like we said, the numbers are just ridiculous.
With that Arizona team, is AJ Pollock in the same way that Goldschmidt is? If you put him on a New York, you put him on a Boston, or even lesser extent, either LA or heck, even Anaheim, people will know a lot more about his greatness.
Yes, I'm brought him up because he's another guy where you could, you know, Trout is excellent, but I think you can make a case that maybe Pollock is the most well-rounded center fielder in baseball right now because he's hitting 315, mm-hmm. He has 17 homers, 35 steals, and he's a really good defensive center fielder. So,
right.
You know, he doesn't have Trout's, like, you know, ridiculous power or even his batting approach or anything like that, but in terms of well-rounded play, I mean, there's nothing he can't do, and he's another guy, like, you know, you can look at, if you're in the wins above replacement, you can look at that and see that he's probably one of the 10 best players in the National League, but on the national scale, he's totally invisible, and it's like, man, just imagine if he was wearing pinstripes or
right.
Dodger blue or something like that.
Well, it's like the old debate with Jeter. You put Jeter, let's say, on Pittsburgh during their time, you know, is he as regarded as he is?
Oh, man, probably not, as much as I hate to say it.
Right.
Because, you know, I'm one of these people who's kind of like downplayed Jeter's accomplishments throughout his career, but we should also recognize that he was a really, really good player for a long time. Like, no, he wasn't perfect, but he was undeniably one of the best shortstops in the league. But, you know, I think when people talk about his legacy, they don't really talk about the fact that he was a great hitting shortstop. they don't talk about the fact that he's a pretty good blend of power and speed. They talk mainly about him being a winner and this and that. And it's like, yeah, he played on some winning teams, but look at who he had around him. I mean, the Yankees had ridiculously deep pockets for a long time. He was surrounded by all the homegrown talent. And a lot of it was just like, you know, yeah, I mean, you can't really chalk up all the winning to him. I mean, the Yankees, back in the day, they had it all figured out. He was the big, just kind of the centerpiece of it all.
Right.
Oh, I wonder if he had been drafted by the Astros instead of the Yankees, or if he had ended up on a team like the Pirates. Probably not. As much as I kind of hate to say that, because I hate that simultaneously, I like, think that Derek Jeter should be kind of played down a little bit, and also at the same time think that we shouldn't downplay him too much, but
Let's just say if he was on the Pirates, he would not have gotten a sandcastle from the Tampa Bay Rays as his goodbye gift. He probably wouldn't get any of these weird goodbye gifts that he got on his tour. But that's, you know, that just made me think, you know, is there a current player out there now that would get a tour like that, like the Jeter tour or the Rivera tour? Maybe
I don't know. Maybe David Ortiz, but it's kind of like...
Yeah. Pujols, maybe?
Pujols, maybe, but it's like, you know, the tricky part is that you have to be really good late in your career, and you have to be really well liked. Pujols, I'm not so sure, is going to be really good. He's not going to probably age as well as Chipper Jones did, as well as Mariano did, as well as Jeter did. And, you know, I like the idea of Ortiz, but it's kind of like I think he's probably more way more beloved in Boston than he is everywhere else, where, you know, everybody's afraid of him, but, like, you know, he has the slow trots around the bases, the bat flips, and, you know, people still hold the PED test back in 2003 against him, so... Man, I don't know. I mean, in terms of current players, like, you know, maybe Kershaw, like, way down the line, but this is a tough one. I just don't know.
Right. It's the same with baseball lore now. I don't think people have fallen in love with characters like they did with the Jeter and the Rivera or Ripken when he retired, or even Biggio to a lesser extent, who got some gifts, I believe, on his way out. And, you know, it's just not there now. Maybe when some of the, like you said, with the Kershaws and the younger kids, like the Trouts, if they age gracefully. But as I said to our buddy Gabe over when I had him on a couple weeks ago, Zach, I miss steroids in baseball. I miss them a lot. I miss players still hitting 50 home runs at the age of 42. I miss 500-foot home runs. I don't care that Chris Bryant is doing it, and popping balls off of the big scoreboard out in Wrigley Field. I miss steroids. I'm sure you're going to disagree, but let's just open the floodgates and let's have at it.
I don't miss steroids because in my mind, that's just the artifice of it all was just nonsense. I mean, what they were doing was just like, it was just not real. It was fun to watch in a vacuum, like in the moment. I mean, I deeply remember being totally in tune with the home run chase in 98 and in 2001 when Bonds did it. And, you know, there were so many dingers, and dingers are great, but you look at the game now and it's kind of like, yeah, there's not a whole lot of scoring, but stuff to appreciate. I mean, if you like pitching, if you actually enjoy the craft of pitching,
right,
there's so much out there to enjoy now. There's so many guys who have great stuff, great command, who just know how to pitch. And also there's kind of been, you know, I think we probably appreciate defense more than we did way back in the day. So I think there are different eras, obviously. And if you like baseball, I think it comes down to you're going to find something to like on the field. So that's my attitude about it. But, like, I really enjoyed what was happening when I was a kid in the 90s and early 2000s, but I might enjoy what's going on now even more just because I know it's not some big special effects show and because it is a different style of baseball that can be enjoyed in its own way.
But, I mean, you look at a team like the Blue Jays. Let's just drop 99 Mark McGwire right in the middle as a DH in that team. That team gets a lot more exciting.
I mean, they're pretty exciting as it is. I mean, if you want to, like, say, what's the closest thing to a steroid-era offense that today's baseball had offered, I mean, it's Blue Jays and the Bell pretty much. And it's fun to watch them. I mean, I wouldn't say it's, like, more fun to watch them than it was, like, you know, I don't know, like one of the early 2000s Yankees teams or, right. you know, early 2000s Red Sox teams. But, you know, the fact that we know that so far as, like, we can tell publicly, it's for real.
That's true.
It's probably here to appreciate what they're doing compared to, like, one of those teams. Even, in, like, especially in retrospect, but even in the moment where everybody could hit. Like, you know, hitting wasn't special at all. It was just kind of like a run-of-the-mill everyday thing. So when you have a team like the Blue Jays, it stands out a whole lot more and probably a lot more enjoyable because of that.
Well, let's stick with them, and I'll move off the steroid topic with the Blue Jays. They get Russ Martin in the offseason, who left Pittsburgh and turned that pitching staff around. It seems like he didn't do – not that it was his fault that – they weren't a great pitching staff, but since they got David Price, it seems like that switch has flipped over and they're in more games that they don't have to have their offense rely on them to keep them in. So is it David Price is the reason why that pitching staff is so well, or Martin finally got a way to click with them and, you know, completed that team?
Yeah, that's a tricky question. I kind of like want to chalk it up to Martin by default because of, you know, his track record in terms of framing pitches and handling pitchers and doing everything you want a catcher to do behind the dish. But if you actually look into what he's been doing this year, his defensive performance is actually not that in tune with his career norms, especially what he was doing in Pittsburgh. So it could be a thing where Dickey and Burley kind of weren't really living up to their track records for a lot of the year, but they've kind of come around lately. And we know that they deepened their pitching staff by going and getting Mark Lowe and LaTroy right. Hawkins and moving Aaron Sanchez to the bullpen. So it could be just this kind of thing where the entire pitching staff got better right around the time they got David Price. And now they're at a point where they're all feeding off of each other, which is another, the Schwarber and the Cubs lineup thing. Like, you can't right. really prove it with numbers, but I remember I talked to a couple of A's pitchers a couple of years ago about, like, do you guys have, like, a friendly competition within the rotation with staff? And they say, yeah, they're always trying to outdo one another. So when the bar is set higher, it could be something that just happened. So that's probably what's going on here.
Or is it going to put them over the edge come the division series that they got who is the pitcher they just got back to opening day? I saw him just start at Yankee Stadium last Saturday.
Marcus Stroman.
That's what it was, yes. Does that set them apart from the rest of the field come the division series?
It could. He's missed so much time that you obviously wonder about how deep in the ball games he's going to go and if he's going to be able to face a lineup three times through if he has diminished stuff later in the game, but he looked pretty good in the start that, you know, I watched his debut start, and he looked pretty good. We know that he has a ridiculously good pitches, and we know that he has pretty good command. And there were times where, you know, it looked like he was struggling, looked like he was kind of out of tune, but for the most part, you can see the talent is still there. So it'll be interesting to see if he uses the last couple of weeks of this season to kind of get on track. And if he can do that, I mean, he's a huge weapon because, like I just said, his stuff is awesome. His command is awesome. He's a guy who certainly down the line is going to be a top of the rotation starter, in my opinion. And if he can be that guy, I mean, that's just another reason I like the Blue Jays to represent the AL because they're just loaded.
So with them, yes or no, their only competition that could potentially derail the season and having them make it back to the World Series for the first time since they won it all in 93 are the Texas Rangers.
Oh, boy. The Rangers are an interesting team to me because I think, I did what a lot of people did around the time they got Cole Hamels. It was kind of like, okay, that's nice. So you got Hamels, see you in 2016. Have fun.
Right.
But here, you know, Hamels is part of a pitching staff that's now pretty solid. They have four solid starters, and they, you know, getting Jake Diekman in that deal has really solidified the back end of their bullpen with Keona Kella and the Sean Tolleson at the back end. So pretty good. But I feel like their offense has been getting by too much on clutch hitting, which is something that can, like, disappear in a flash.
Right.
But as we saw with their huge outburst yesterday, you know, this is a lineup that does have some dangerous bats in it. So if they can all get going at the same time, Maybe, but I don't know if I buy them as a legit challenge to the Blue Jays, just because I don't think anybody's a legit challenge to them. But
okay.
I don't know. The Rangers are weird. It's kind of hard to sum up my feelings about them. I don't know if I'm a believer in that. I recognize that they are better now than they were before, certainly.
So not even if the Royals can somehow snap out of their funk, because, I mean, I don't blame them for going soft for the last couple. I mean, they're 3-7 over their last 10. So, you know, if they can, and they're, I think, 13 games up in their division. So what are they playing for aside from not to get hurt? You know, can they recapture that magic of last year with a little postseason experience under their belt now and adding Cueto and make a run deep again?
Well, what's kind of concerning about them is, like, besides the fact that Cueto has been a mess in his last few outings, I mean, apparently that's mechanical, and they better hope it is, because they need him. I mean,
right.
Because the other problem with that team is that all of a sudden, like, the HDH trio, you know, the Greg Holland, Wade Davis, and Kelvin Herrera,
right,
not that good all of a sudden. And that could be a case of all of those innings last year and earlier
this
catching up to them. And if they don't have that amazing trio, I mean, that more than anything was what was really responsible for them to getting to the World Series last year. So that's a big concern. Their offense is totally hit or miss, because it's like, yeah, they don't draw a lot of walks. The power is just okay, and, you know, they can go into these slumps. So I don't know. It's like I recognize what they have on paper is really good, but all of a sudden, like, it's not really translated in the field, and there are reasons to be worried about that. And if you put them up against the Blue Jays, I mean, right now I think it's kind of one-sided.
So I got one last team here to ask you about that can possibly pose a threat, and I kind of hope this happens. I feel bad for the Astros. My buddy Julia does their sideline work with them. She was there for the no-hitter that was thrown.
Mike Fires.
There we go, the old Milwaukee Brewers pitcher. I mean, she's seen some great baseball this year, especially with the emergence of Correa. You know, Keuchel getting to be on a national stage. I just think they've ran out of gas. But the one team I hope goes deep and he has a great postseason and they're forced to give him a big trophy at the end, good old A-Rod and the Yankees. Do they have any chance at making a deep run and A-Rod being the hero and getting the MVP trophy and us being forced to say, good job, A-Rod, you're a winner?
That would be, like, in the all-time pantheon of great, like, troll moments. Like, A-Rod being, like, this huge, like, World Series superhero after all that's happened the last few years would be the most trolly thing ever. And it would be awesome, even if you just hate A-Rod, just because, like I said, the most trolly thing ever.
Like, if he hits 3-7...
I don't think it's going to happen.
Like,
my view of the Yankees is that I feel like they kind of blew their load, if I can say that,
on
the show, like, earlier in the season, especially offensively, when he was really good, Teixeira was really good, Ellsbury and Gardner were really good. But ever since then, I mean, talk about a team that's kind of run out of gas.
Right.
The offense hasn't been the same. They never had great starting pitching, so... And A-Rod is at a point now where it's like, yeah, he's still, like, popping homers pretty consistently, but on homers, he's, like, striking out. He's hitting his ground balls. So I think maybe it's caught up to him a little bit. I think not playing a whole lot in recent years has caught up to him. So I don't see it. They're, like, the one team in the American League where it's like, yeah, you're going to make it, but you're probably not going to go very far, I hate to tell you, because – They did all their best baseball earlier in the year, and now they're just kind of diminished, and they just don't inspire a whole lot of confidence.
Right. I mean, I hope he goes 375, 6 home runs, 19 RBIs, and an on-base percentage of, like, 450. That would be great. And then that would be, like you said, ultimate troll job or redemption with the 1-3 in the middle of the word because, you know, branding. But let's go deep here with the Pirates for a couple minutes. Jung Ho looks like he's out. I saw the replay here while we were talking, and his body went left and his knee went right, which is never a recipe for a good thing. I was talking to our buddy Adam Wells offline before this. Jordy Mercer is going to have to take over for him at shortstop, but is there any way that, say, Harrison takes over at short, or maybe one of the kids on Indianapolis comes up and fills that hole that Jung Ho has left him?
I'd have to think they're probably going to roll with Mercer because they at least know they're going to get good defense out of him.
Yeah, that's true.
Harrison, you know, he's probably better suited to play third base full-time or right field full-time. Like, he can pass as a shortstop, but he's not particularly a good one. He doesn't really bat to kind of make up for it. So I think it's going to be like, okay, Mercer, we know he can at least play good defense, so let's stick with him. But, I mean, we just have to say it. Like, losing Dung, that's a huge blow.
I know.
Like, that hurts. Because, like, you know, I think they've been a really good offensive team this year, and I think in a lot of ways it has more to do with their depth than anything else. Like, they have a lot of above-average hitters, or, you know, average to above-average hitters. But if you want to, like, get to the end of the guys who are really scared, Bachchan and Dung. I mean, Bachchan's got 146 OPS plus. After that, the best belongs to Dung at 123. So losing him is losing your second best hitter.
Right.
And according to science, that's not a good thing. So hate to tell you, but like, ouch. It's like, yeah, it's going to hurt.
I mean, it's like, as a Steeler fan, we saw Le'Veon Bell go down week 17, right before the playoffs. You know he's in there. I mean, you have other offensive weapons as well that can help carry, but he is a guy that can be a game breaker whenever you need him. And sure enough, a guy careens into his knee and there goes the entire playoffs. But with this Pirates team, more likely they're going to finish in the wild card, which is great. Third straight year. It's nothing to be upset about. But that being said, Gerrit Cole hasn't started the previous two games. First one being Liriano. Second one being Volquez last year. Is this Cole's ball to take, or are they going to go with, say, Liriano, or even at a lesser extent, Hop as the lefty to go against this Cubs team?
I have to think if they had their druthers, it would be Cole. Just, you know, I know that he's kind of faded a little bit since starting off like super hot, but like, I don't know, Liriano's good, but it's like, how far do you trust him? Because
right,
you never know how to walk in the ballpark or doing something like that. Whereas Cole is a little bit of a safer bet. You know the command is there. You know the stuff is there. So I have to think if it came down to a choice of, like, any of their starters, it would probably be him and then just, like, Johnny Holstaff backing him up. So
right.
I don't know. We'll see. I don't think it would be anybody other than Cole if they had their choice.
So there's no way that they would give the ball to Hop, who I believe he did just pitch against the Cubs this week. Gave up three runs, which is bad, but I believe struck out 8 in 5 innings.
Yeah, and he's got a 196 ERA with, I think, a 5.5 strikeout to walk ratio. He's been fantastic.
Right.
But, you know, I just was a Pirates fan. He kind of held with him. Like, he's been good, but at the same time, we know his track record says he's a very, very hittable pitcher.
That's true.
And so he's one of those guys where it's like, you know, Coquez last year, where it's like, yeah, he had the good ERA, but he made it an adventure every time he took the ball. Half, I kind of put him in the same category. Like, I know the numbers are there, but, like, you never know when he's going to just start serving him up. And, like, in these wild card games, like, you know, we found out last year, you get into an early hole and it's done. So if you have your choice, you have to go with the guy, your best arm is what it comes down to. So I don't know if they would trust his hot stretch that much over Cole's awesome right arm if they have the choice.
Well, and you bring up last year's wild card game. It was the birth of Bumgarner, you know, the legend he became in that postseason. As a Pirates fan, should I fear that the same thing's going to happen with Arrieta, where people know he's good, but then he comes into PNC Park for that wild card game, throws 9 shutout innings, 10 strikeouts, and then just leads the Cubs to an impressive run?
I mean, you should fear Arrieta regardless of the situation. He's scary, like, because you've seen him pitch. Like, he throws – everything he throws moves. Everything he throws is hard.
Right.
And he commands it, too. Like, he knows where he's putting these pitches, whether it's in the strike zone or just playing with the strike zone, getting these guys to chase. Like, he's the total package. And it is freaking scary, like, how good he is. And, you know, I think, you know, you look back to Bumgarner, I think the one thing a lot of people overlook is that he was getting really hot, like, before that wild card game. I think his ERA in the second half was, like, in the low twos.
Right.
And he was striking everybody out and not walking anybody. That's exactly what Arrieta is doing now, and he's like Bumgarner, this big, strong guy who could potentially put an entire pitching staff on his shoulders. So whether it's the Pirates, whether it's anybody else, he is a guy who should scare you. He's really, he's scary. There's no other way to put it.
Now, if he can put five Bud Lights or whatever their whatever the sponsorship is, like Budweiser, into his hands and then chug all of them at once, then I'll be really frightened because that's what got me with Bumgarner last year. But one thing with this wild card game, you know, as much as I would love to see the Pirates win again and not just win the number one spot again and host the game again, as a fan, can I rationalize my head seeing that game in Wrigley Field and then just knowing that place would be such a pressure cooker in one bad inning, like say in the first or second, and those fans will be done?
I don't know. I mean, I think you're, I guess you're referring to the fact that like as soon as something bad happens to the Cubs fans, yeah, they remember their Cubs fans and told that up. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah, just like the Bartman game, game six, the championship
game
season.
Game six, yeah. After that, it was like, well, we're screwed.
Yeah, exactly.
And they were quiet the rest of the... I haven't thought about that, but it's kind of like, I still think if you're a Pirate fan, you want to buy out our game to get home. As I move to my browser and check out their home record, it is 50-24, 37-34 on the road, so I think you sign more with those numbers than hope that they play on the road and get off to a fast start just to
take everybody out.
Silence those poor, poor Cubs fans. I mean, they deserve a good run.
They do. I agree with you. My wife is a Cubs fan, so I've been at the Cubby Bear and then went to Wrigley Field many times against the Pirates, and I've enjoyed myself even after a Pirate loss. But, you know, with the young, you know, in my head, like I said, one bad inning, like an error from Castro, and all the fans turn on him because he is their poster boy of, if something goes wrong, we are just gonna just 100% heel turn on you and boo you out of the park. But with that fan base being on such just pins and needles the entire game, and the young kids, you know, won't they feel a lot more pressure being at home for a one-game playoff as compared to being on the road?
I don't know about that because, remember, we're talking about PNC Park here. Remember what happened to Johnny Cueto a couple of years ago? This is a veteran who couldn't hold his stuff together when that crowd got on him. So just imagine, like, I don't want to, like, get into stereotypes here, like, oh, their kids are inexperienced, therefore they have soft skin and the melted brains and whatnot. but it's, you know, yeah, they've never been in the situation. It is a predominantly young team. And even if it is Arrieta, he doesn't have postseason experience.
True.
So I think you'd rather put the young team in PNC Park than go to that young team's ballpark and hope that they fall under the pressure there. Because PNC Park is such a hostile atmosphere, or, you know, at least in the playoffs it is. Like, during the regular season, it can be tolerated. But in the postseason, it's like an entirely different story. We saw it completely get in the head of a veteran like Johnny Cueto. So, yeah, I still think keep the game at home and that's where you're going to win, or at least have the best chance to win.
See, my only fear about the crowd, they're going to wear their black jerseys. It'll probably be their blackout. And yes, you're exactly right. The crowd will be electric. I mean, it'll be 36,000 people, but that stadium, you are packed in, and not on top of each other, but, you know, the sound travels. It stays in the park and then just travels right to the outfield. But, I mean, this is the third straight year in the wild card game. My fear with this fan base is they're complacent. You know, they're going to see it and they're like, okay, great. If we win, we move on to play the Cardinals, and then we'll get up for that series. So that's my fear with them, is that they just won't get up for the series. And then, you know, the Cubs, they could come in and easily win that game. And here we go again with Bumgarner and another offseason of what if. From there. Okay, last question with this playoffs thing, and I thought of it earlier, and I forgot about it from where we got going here. Mattingly and the Dodgers. I know we didn't talk about them that much here on this show, on this podcast, and we're coming up here almost 40 minutes. Do they need to reach World Series for Mattingly to be behind that bench next year, or do they need to reach World Series for even Puig to be on the field next year for the Dodgers?
I can see a situation where if they don't advance to the World Series, it could be on Mattingly's head. But it really comes down to how he pushes the buttons. Like, I don't think he did a good job pushing the buttons the last 2 years, but we know at least in part that what happened last year was him not taking Kershaw out in those two starts had to do with the fact that he didn't have a bullpen. And that's kind of true this year, too. So. Right. I don't know. Like, I'm not a big fan of Mattingly's managing, but, I mean, he's better than Matt Williams. And, you know, I think you can kind of chalk up his shortcomings to the fact that oftentimes he's dealing with a roster that is not as perfect, especially in bullpen. So, I don't know. Like, it really will come down to specific situations because apparently the front office likes him, which surprises the heck out of me because, like, I thought he was a goner as soon as Friedman and Farhan Zaidi came aboard, but that didn't happen, and they've kind of like spoke, you know, they've kind of backed him up. And relative to other years, it has been a relatively stress-free year for him, so I think he's probably bought some confidence. So I don't know. I think it really comes down to the specific kind of ebb and flow of his performance in the postseason. I think he'd really have to crap the bed in order to lose his job.
Right. Yep. And that's why I want to ask you about that one, because it was festering in my head. All right, last question here on the podcast, and I'll get you on this one. Star Wars, less than 100 days until the December release. The one question I had for you is, are we expecting this to be good because of the name and the new team behind it? Or is there a fear that, or is there any fear in your mind that it's going to turn out to be like 1-3, where so much hype was built up and we knew it was, you know, it was going to be good because of the name, but then we saw what happened in the final product of, as I said, 1-3.
Well, first of all, I feel like I'm a huge Star Wars fan. You're a Star Wars fan. That's great. But I'm in my late 20s. I think you're in your 30s, right?
33.
So, yeah, I mean, just by default, we should not be like children and be anticipating this movie be good, otherwise our lives are ruined. So there is that. And, you know, I think my approach to it is like cautious optimism because, right, like, I know they're talking up like practical effects, which is awesome because the CGI in the prequels was largely terrible and has not aged well at all. And we know that they're bringing back the original cast trilogy, but we don't know anything about the story. And more than anything, you can talk about the effects all you want, but the stories of the prequels were largely terrible. So that's what's really going to have to make the movie work. Then, all this being said, though, I am beyond like excited for this movie just because, I mean, freaking Luke Skywalker's coming back, freaking Han Solo's coming back. Everything, like the two trailers, two teasers they've released, you know, there hasn't been a whole lot in there, but it looks freaking awesome, and it looks like there is kind of like a pretty good like foundation laid for a compelling story there. It's cautious optimism, but I think probably way more optimism than cautiousism, if you will, just because like everything that they've kind of like let the fanboys gobble up, it's like just hit all the right notes in doing it. And it's like, yeah, they're kind of playing to the crowd and they know their crowd, but it's like, the fact that they do know what people want kind of makes me excited about what they're going to show us. And just the fact that it is Star Wars when I never thought I was going to get any more Star Wars, that gives me happy feelings in places, and I'm very excited.
Agreed on that one. And I was going to ask a follow-up question, but from there, I think we'll cut it on that one. So, Zach, thank you very much for coming on. Bleacher Report, baseball. Any big projects in the work that you want to get out there right now for a little a teaser like they have for these last Star Wars trailers?
All I can say is that you might want to stay tuned next week because I got something big coming out.
All right. We'll pay attention to the Twitter and also Bleacher Report MLB for that one.
All right, there's this week's episode with the man himself, Zach Reimer. Hit him up on Twitter with your baseball questions at Zach Reimer, or if you're drinking a nice IPA or a lager or anything that's not Miller Lite, Coors Light, Budweiser, Bud Light, or Busch, or anything of that ilk, and he'll give you a good report or respond. We'll go with that one. About what you're drinking, he's a big beer aficionado, or if you're into running, guy runs a ton of marathons from San Fran to Oakland's to anywhere else in California. I'm the only two I can think of right now. But yeah, Zach is a great mind to talk to, great person to be a friend with too. So that's it for this week's episode. Be sure to follow the podcast on my Twitter feed at TJ Macaloon. That's MCALOON, which you can also follow on the show from Place to Be Nation. Drop them a line. A little comment on our page over at iTunes, where you can find a bunch of other podcasts as well from the Place to Be Nation family. And also Stitcher Radio 2 or Podbean or wherever else you can try to find the show. All right, we're coming up on the hour. I've been talking for too long, even probably listening for too long. So I'll wrap it up here. For TJ Macaloon, that's me, and the show. We'll talk to you next time.